Chapter 15. I headed over to Warburton a damn sight faster than the prison driver had, and I was there in less than 50 minutes. It was a hell of a sight. There was a storm coming in quickly from the west, and shafts of low afternoon sun were escaping the clouds and hitting the place. The glittering metal towers and turrets were catching the orange rays. I slowed up and pulled into the prison approach, stopped outside the first vehicle cage. I wasn't going in there. I'd had enough of that. Spivey was going to have to come out to me. I got out of the Bentley and walked over to the guard. He seemed friendly enough. "Spivey on duty?" I asked him.
"You want him?"
the guard said. "Tell him Mr. Reach is here," I said. The guy ducked under a Perspex hood and made a call. Ducked back out again and shouted over to me,
"He doesn't know any Mr. Reacher," he said.
"Tell him Chief Morrison sent me," I said. "Over from Margrave." The guy went under the Perspex thing again and started talking. After a minute, he was back out.
"Okay, drive on through," he said. "Spivey will meet you at reception."
"Tell him he's got to come out here," I said. "Meet me on the road." I walked away and stood in the dust on the edge of the blacktop. It was a battle of nerves. I was betting Spivey would come on out. I'd know in 5 minutes. I waited. I could smell rain coming out of the west. In an hour, it was going to roll right over us. I stood and waited. Spivey came out. I heard the grills on the vehicle cage grinding across. I turned and saw a dirty Ford driving through. It came out and stopped next to the Bentley. Spivey heaved himself out. He walked over. Big guy, sweating, red face and hands. His uniform was dirty. "Remember me?" I asked him. His small snake eyes flicked around. He was adrift and worried.
"You're Reacher," he said. "So what?"
"Right," I said. "I'm Reacher. From Friday. What was the deal?" He shifted from foot to foot. He was going to play hard to get. But he'd already showed his hand. He'd come out to meet me. He'd already lost the game. But he didn't speak. "What was the deal on Friday?" I said again.
"Morrison is dead," he said.
Then he shrugged and clamped his thin lips. Wouldn't say any more. I stepped casually to my left, just a foot or so, to put Spivey's bulk between me and the gate guard, so the gate guard couldn't see. Morrison's switchblade appeared in my hand. I held it up at Spivey's eye level for a second, just long enough for him to read the gold-filled engraving in the ebony. Then the blade popped out with a loud click. Spivey's small eyes were fixed on it.
"You think I used this on Morrison?" I said.
He was staring at the blade. It shone blue in the stormy sun.
"It wasn't you," he said. "But maybe you had good reason."
I smiled at him. He knew it wasn't me who killed Morrison. Therefore, he knew who had. Therefore, he knew who Morrison's bosses were. Simple as that. Three little words, and I was getting somewhere. I moved the blade a fraction closer to his big red face. "Want me to use this on you?" I said. Spivey looked around wildly, saw the gate guard 30 yards away. "He's not going to help you," I said. "He hates your useless fat guts. He's just a guard. You sucked ass and got promotion. He wouldn't piss on you if you were on fire. Why should he?"
"So what do you want?"
Spivey said. "Friday," I said. "What was the deal?"
"And if I tell you?"
he said. I shrugged at him.
"Depends what you tell me," I said. "You tell me the truth, I'll let you go back inside."
"Want to tell me the truth?" He didn't reply. We were just standing there by the road, a battle of nerves. His nerves were shot to hell, so he was losing. His little eyes were darting about. They always came back to the blade.
"Okay, I'll tell you," he said. "Time to time, I helped Morrison out. He called me Friday. Said he was sending two guys over. Names meant nothing to me. Never heard of you or the other guy. I was supposed to get the Hubble guy killed, that's all. Nothing was supposed to happen to you, I swear."
"So what went wrong?" I asked him.
"My guy screwed up," he said. "That's all, I swear it. It was the other guy we were after.
Nothing was supposed to happen to you. You got out of there, right? No damage done, right? So why give me a hard time?
I flashed the blade up real quick and nicked his chin. He froze in shock. A moment later, a fat worm of dark blood welled out of the cut.
What was the reason? I asked him.
There's never a reason, he said. I just do what I'm told.
You do what you're told, I said.
I do what I'm told, he said again. I don't want to know any reasons.
So who told you what to do, I said.
Morrison, he said. Morrison told me what to do.
And who told Morrison what to do, I asked him.
I held a blade an inch from his cheek. He was just about whimpering with fear. I stared into his small snake eyes. He knew the answer. I could see that far back in those eyes. He knew who told Morrison what to do.
Who told him what to do? I asked him again.
I don't know, he said. I swear it. Grave of my mother.
I stared at him for a long moment, shook my head.
Wrong, Spivey, I said. You do know. You're going to tell me.
Now Spivey shook his head. His big red face jerked from side to side. The blood was running down his chin onto his slabby jowls.
They'll kill me if I do, he said.
I flicked the knife at his belly, slit his greasy shirt.
I'll kill you if you don't, I said.
Guy like Spivey, he thinks short term. If he told me, he'd die tomorrow. If he didn't tell me, he'd die today. That's how he thought. Short term. So he set about telling me. His throat started working up and down like it was too dry to speak. I stared into his eyes. He couldn't get any words out. He was like a guy in a movie who crawls up a desert dune and tries to call for water. But he was going to tell me. Then he wasn't. Over his shoulder I saw a dust plume far in the east. Then I heard the faint roar of a diesel engine. Then I made out the gray shape of the prison bus rolling in. Spivey snapped his head around to look at his salvation. The gate guard wandered out to meet the bus. Spivey snapped his head back to look at me. There was a mean gleam of triumph in his eyes. The bus was getting closer.
Who was it, Spivey? I said. Tell me now, or I'll come back for you.
But he just backed off and turned and hustled over to his dirty Ford. The bus roared in and blew dust all over me. I closed up the switchblade and put it back in my pocket, jogged over to the Bentley, and took off. The coming storm chased me all the way back east. I felt I had more than a storm after me. I was sick with frustration. This morning I had been just one conversation away from knowing everything. Now I knew nothing. The situation had suddenly turned sour. I had no backup, no facilities, no help. I couldn't rely on Roscoe or Finley. I couldn't expect either of them to agree with my agenda. And they had troubles of their own up at the station house. What had Finley said? Working under the enemy's nose? And I couldn't expect too much from Picard. He was already way out on a limb. I couldn't count on anybody but myself. On the other hand, I had no laws to worry about, no inhibitions, no distractions. I wouldn't have to think about Miranda, probable cause, constitutional rights. I wouldn't have to think about reasonable doubt or rules of evidence. No appeal to any higher authority for these guys. Was that fair? You bet your ass. These were bad people. They'd stepped over the line a long time ago. Bad people. What had Finley said? As bad as they come. And they had killed Joe Reacher. I rolled the Bentley down the slight hill to Roscoe's house, parked on the road outside her place. She wasn't home. The Chevrolet wasn't there. The big chrome clock on the Bentley's dash showed 10 of 6. 10 minutes to wait. I got out of the front seat and got into the back, stretched out on the big old car's leather bench. I wanted to get away from Margrave for the evening. I wanted to get out of Georgia altogether. I found a map in a pocket on the back of the driver's seat. I peered at it and figured if we went west for an hour, hour and a half, back past Warburton again, we'd cross the state line into Alabama. That's what I wanted to do. blast west with Roscoe into Alabama and pull into the first live music bar we came to. Put my troubles on hold until tomorrow. Eat some cheap food, drink some cold beer, hear some dirty music. With Roscoe. My idea of a hell of an evening. I settled back to wait for her. The dark was gathering in. I felt a faint chill in the evening air. About 6 o'clock, huge drops started hammering on the roof of the Bentley. It felt like a big evening thunderstorm was moving in, but it never really arrived. It never really let loose. Just the big, early drops spattering down like the sky was straining to unload, but wouldn't let go. It went very dark, and the heavy car rocked gently in the damp wind. Roscoe was late. The storm had been threatening for about 20 minutes before I saw her Chevy winding down the rise. Her headlights swept and arced left and right. They washed over me as she swung into her driveway. They blazed against her garage door, then died as she cut the power. I got out of the Bentley and stepped over to her. We held each other and kissed. Then we went inside. "You okay?" I asked her.
"I guess," she said. "Hell of a day."
I nodded. It had been. "Upset?" I asked her. She was moving around, switching lamps on, pulling drapes.
"This morning was the worst thing I've ever seen," she said. "By far the worst thing. But I'm going to tell you something I would never tell anyone else. I wasn't upset. Not about Morrison. You can't get upset about a guy like that. But I'm upset about his wife. Bad enough living with a guy like Morrison without dying because of him too, right?"
"What about the rest of it?" I asked her. "Teal?"
"I'm not surprised," she said. "That whole family has been scumbags for 200 years. I know all about them. His family and my family go way back together. Why should he be any different? But God, I'm glad everybody else in the department turned out clean. I was dreading finding out one of those guys had been in it too. I don't know if I could have faced that."
She went into the kitchen and I followed. She went quiet. She wasn't falling apart, but she wasn't happy. She pulled open the refrigerator door. It was a gesture which said, "The cupboard is bare." She smiled a tired smile at me.
"You want to buy me dinner?"
she said.
"Sure,"
I said. "But not here. In Alabama." I told her what I wanted to do. She liked the plan. She brightened up and went to take a shower. I figured I could use a shower too, so I went with her. But we hit a delay because as soon as she started to unbutton her crisp uniform shirt, my priorities shifted. The lure of an Alabama bar receded, and the shower could wait too. She was wearing black underwear beneath the uniform. Not very substantial items. We ended up in a frenzy on the bedroom floor. The thunderstorm was finally breaking outside. The rain was lashing the little house. Lightning was blazing and the thunder was crashing about. We finally made it to the shower. By then, we really needed it. Afterward, then, I lay on the bed while Roscoe dressed. She put on faded denims and a silky shirt. We turned off the lamps again and locked up and took off in the Bentley. It was 7:30 and the storm was drifting off to the east, heading for Charleston before boiling out over the Atlantic. Might hit Bermuda tomorrow. We headed west toward a pinker sky. I found the road back out to Warburton, cruised down the farm roads between the endless dark fields, and blasted past the prison. It squatted, glowering in its ghastly yellow light. A half hour after Warburton, we stopped to fill the old car's gigantic tank. Threaded through some tobacco country and crossed the Chattahoochee by an old river bridge in Franklin, then a sprint down to the state line. We were in Alabama before 9 o'clock. We agreed to take a chance and stop at the first bar.